After multiple extensions, the deadline to apply for individual federal disaster aid is this Friday. That's as longer than normal wait times and confusion frustrate some around the state. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Ryan Bankin for Melissa Ross. We're always live here at 9, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or through the WJCT app. And just ahead, Federal Emergency Management Agency representatives are here to answer your questions about applying for and receiving disaster aid. Give us a call, 549-2937. Later, Mayo Clinic's Dr. Joy Wolfram on treating cancer and women in research, plus our Movable Feast segment and a local music artist who daylights as a National Guard reservist and emergency first responder. Don't miss his amazing story. All of that and more ahead. But first this hour, President Donald Trump is asking for $44 billion in extra disaster aid, $25 billion of which will go to FEMA. After the agency's coffers have been stressed lately after multiple disasters. In the last couple of months, the agency has seen an unprecedented, uninterrupted, it seems, sequence of disasters. California wildfires, Hurricane Harvey in Texas, Irma in Florida, and both Maria and Irma in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. That has left FEMA not only cash-strapped, but slightly overwhelmed with claims and pleas for help. The agency has gotten mostly good marks for its response directly after each one of these storms, but some folks who are still waiting for help are bemoaning the process. To help us wade through the intricacies of disaster aid, we're joined by FEMA's Gerard Hamnick and Small Business Administration's Shauna K. Mallett. Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. What questions do you have? Have you had a good experience applying for help? Have you been denied aid on your first go around? Maybe our experts here can give you a hand. Give us a call, 549-2937. Again, the number is 549-2937. So I guess let's start with like an update here for our region in Northeast Florida. What are we looking at? How many people have gone through and applied for disaster aid? How many businesses have applied? And, you know, how many people have been helped thus far?
Well, so far, you know, FEMA has dispersed statewide about $900 million in aid, and that's for repairs, home repairs, for replacement of personal property that wasn't covered by insurance, as well as that includes money for temporary housing. And a lot of people are still relying on temporary housing rental assistance to as they try to get their lives back together.
Right. And does that include also the project of blue roofs, the tarps that are used to help people that have had damage to their roofs, things like that?
That's a partner program. And I don't their numbers are kind of separate, but those people still are using those until they can get their roofs repaired. And so I'm not sure about the numbers on that, but I think Shauna Kay has the latest numbers, I'm sure, on
for the
SBA loans.
For SBA loans, as far as the applications we receive, we have almost 100,000 applications that have been received, of which about 82% has been processed.
Wow.
And right now we're actually looking at, as of yesterday, over $651 million in assistance loans being granted. So
now, again, we've been over this before on the show and then on the station, but the Small Business Administration, the name really kind of belies how broad the work is, right? So
do you want
to give people a little bit of a readout of exactly what the SBA does?
Right. So, well, the Small Business Administration Office of Disaster Assistance, we're federal partners with FEMA. What we do is we come in and we assist through our low-interest long-term loan program. And that's able to assist homeowners, renters, businesses, and non-for-profits, which may include organizations of faith. And through our low-interest long-term loans, we try to assist the community in getting back to their pre-disaster conditions. So, for homeowners, they can borrow up to $200,000 to repair or replace damages to their primary residence. And for homeowners and renters, they can borrow up to $40,000 to repair or replace damages to their personal property. So if you were to move from your home, the things that you would take with you, that would be your personal property. So we may be able to assist you with that if your automobile was damaged by the disaster. And again, this is disaster-related damages.
Mm-hmm.
We may be able to assist through our low-interest long-term loan program, which is, you know, for homeowners and renters can be as low as 1.75% for terms up to 30 years.
And we want to get to your calls. We have a couple of people calling in and some people tweeting at the show. Again, the number is 549-2937, 549-2937. Shauna Kay, can you tell us, there's a couple of business recovery centers and they've been open for a while and they're going to continue to be open, but can you give us a readout on when they'll be closed for the Thanksgiving holiday and how long they'll be open and how long people will have a chance to go in and apply for assistance?
Right. So we do have a business recovery center located at 728 Blanche Street, and they will be open today, tomorrow, and they will open again on Friday mm-hmm. and on Saturday, but they will be closed for the Thanksgiving holiday. We also have a location at Disaster Recovery Center, where SBA is also located in Jacksonville, and Gerard can provide some of that.
Yes, our Disaster Recovery Center is open today at the FSCJ Kent campus, mm-hmm. and that is until 7 p.m., and then it is open tomorrow morning until noon, from 9 a.m. to noon tomorrow. And then that one closes. There's also a disaster recovery center in St. Augustine, and that's open today, tomorrow morning. And then that one is also open the day after Thanksgiving.
The day after Thanksgiving. So people can go in. Starting at what time would it be open?
9 a.m.
9 a.m. So even after the Thanksgiving holiday, that Friday is the last day for the deadline, and these recovery centers will be open.
Well, the one in St. Augustine will be open on Friday. The one in Jacksonville will not be.
Okay.
Right. Well, actually, okay. The business recovery center, and excuse me for this, but the business recovery center at 728 Blanche Street in Building 2, Jacksonville, will actually be closed on Thursday and Friday, but as I said, they will reopen on Saturday. And they're actually going to be the St. Lucie County Office for Business Recovery is also going to be closed on November 23rd and the 24th as well.
And I want to assure our listeners, we're going to make sure that we put all of this information in one place online that you can refer back to. And we've got that for you. So if you, for whatever reason, you've missed what we're talking about today, and if you have questions, again, call 549-2937 right now to get on the line with some disaster relief representatives. We do have a call from Tammy in St. Augustine. Tammy, you're on the air. What's your question?
Oh, I'm not sure. Good morning.
Good morning.
First time caller.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not sure if this is a FEMA question, but I applied for the Food for Florida, and I was awarded it, and they told me to proceed to a center, and I didn't get the information in time to get to a center while it was in town. Is there going to be any way to get that food, you know, the food card?
Sure. We will get through that right now. So
the Food for Florida program, right? DSNAP for disaster supplemental. I forget what it stands for. but that is administered by the state of Florida, and FEMA knows about it and is happy they're doing it, but we don't administer that, so I cannot answer questions about that program.
Yeah, and Tammy, there was the program that you're speaking about, again, is it comes from the federal government, but it's administered by the state of Florida, and they have opened and closed and reopened a couple of different centers over time to allow people to kind of wait in line and get sign up and get their benefits. They're talking about now trying to open up some some phone lines so that people can call in if waiting in line is going to be a big hindrance. I'm thinking of people who are seniors or disabled or otherwise unable to wait in some of these lines. They are setting up a system by which you can call and apply and get your benefits via phone. We'll try to figure out more of that and put that in the story that we published today on WJCT.org. So we've got a couple of questions too on Twitter. Abel says he's got a few questions here, so we're going to try to break this down. Why are scores of folks who lost homes in Northeast Florida still waiting on insurance/FEMA adjusters? That's the first of his three or four questions he has there. Do you want to address that,
Gerard? Well, I'm not sure about the private adjusters, but I can say that acknowledge that there were delays in the time it took for FEMA contractor inspectors to make their inspections. But at this point, we're really almost caught up, and at this point, 97% of inspections are complete. So there's a small percentage that are not done, and those are going to be done shortly. And certainly some people may have been missed. And so that is, people who are missed, you know, need to let FEMA know that they haven't been seen an inspector, and either call our 800 number or come to a disaster recovery center if they can in these couple days and find out what's happening with their application.
Sure. And then aside from that, Abel also asked, how many staff members has FEMA allocated to our region and what are their roles? What can they produce to show results today? We talked about some of the results at the top of the show, but
there were 4,500, no, not 4,000, you know, 500 inspectors in the field. So that has dropped. There's only about 600 inspectors, for instance, right now.
And they did everything from canvassing neighborhoods.
The canvassers were a whole nother team.
A whole nother team. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what the figures right in front of me about how many FEMA employees have been in the state, but it's many. And like Sean and Kay and I are from, you know, out of state. But the other thing that it's good to mention here is that FEMA is hiring in Florida to work on the continued recovery programs as some of this takes a long time to work through.
Definitely. Well, we've got another call, this time from St. Augustine Beach. Celeste, you are on the line. What's your question?
Hi, I'm a small business owner, and my business occupies a piece of property which I own individually. That property suffered a lot of damage in the hurricane, and I understand the only relief FEMA can offer me is an SBA loan. But I am in the process personally of applying for a mortgage, so I hesitate to jump on a loan application for fear of jeopardizing the other one. What kind of feedback or advice can you give about the timing in that case?
Sure. I guess, Shauna Kay, what kind of advice can you give someone who's a little leery about taking out a loan? I mean, when the word loan is attached to the relief, they're for good reason, people are a little bit more anxious about doing that.
Right. So, FEMA primarily deals with grants. SBA deals with loans. And that's because, again, we have low interest long-term loan programs. So based on the level of your disaster impact, what your need is in order to recover, we're focusing on long-term. So yes, we are loans. You do have to pay it back. But again, with the focus that it's up to 30 years. So if you need $20,000 with an interest rate that can be as low as 1.75% for terms up to 30 years, you know, we're not a bank. We're not asking, you know, for your house if that's floating along the St. John's River. You know, if it's over $25,000, yes, we may require collateral if it's available. But, you know, we'll never deny for lack of collateral.
And so is there any effect? I mean, I guess it would be out of the SBA or FEMA's control here, but is there any measurable effect when you take out one of these loans? Does it have an effect on your ability to, you know, take out another mortgage or go into, you know, does it affect your credit in a way?
Well, as far as affecting your credit, again, it is a loan. So it follows typical loan standards as far as what your requirements are. But you should really speak with your local bank, whoever your representative is, to get a better understanding of how it will impact you. Because in this situation, you're looking to get a mortgage on this home. Is this home the same one that is also damaged by the hurricane? What is the bank thinking along those terms? Will you need extensive repairs? Would you need to borrow in addition to for your mortgage to do the repairs from this bank? You really have to get a one-on-one conversation going with your bank as far as what you need to recover. As far as the business, the Small Business Administration, again, our loan program is here as an additional resource if you need it. You are under no obligations to take some of it, all of it, or take anything at all. But go through the steps of the process. Complete your FEMA registration if you haven't already done so. Go to the SBA and complete and submit that application. It's better to know what your options are versus hedging your bets, because you don't want to, again, our deadline is the 24th. You don't want to wait until the very last minute and then realize that you also need additional information that you have to gather, and then you miss out on, an available resource for you.
Right. And I actually want to revisit the DSNAP issue just for a second here. I have the exact dates. Apparently, the federal government is agreed to consider allowing telephone calls, as I said, telephone interviews for the elderly and disabled who are pre-registered. You have to be pre-registered. And you have to be doing these phone interviews are going to be only offered December 2nd and December 3rd. So Tammy in St. Augustine, that's some extra information. If you're still listening, we'll make sure that we get this up on our website as well. So we've got a couple other calls, and I will get to them in just a second. But let's just do a refresher here of how people are supposed to apply, what the process is. It would seem like it could be rather late, but, disasters, there's a lot of things that are out of your control. So there might be people that haven't even thought of or haven't even sat down to start the process yet, even though the deadline is Friday. Where do they start?
So most people start at disasterassistance.gov. That's where you register. That's the best place to register for FEMA aid. And you need your basic information. By the way, that's the only time you're going to be asked for that information, like your social security number and your bank information. So you take about 15 to 20 minutes and register. And then that starts a process that then you maybe want to go to a disaster recovery center where you can talk about how to move the process forward with one of the specialists there. Then the process also then, many people then may be eligible for aid from FEMA or may not be. And then many people get referred to the SBA and for a possible loan. And as Shauna Kay is always saying, fill out that application. It is another application.
Right.
And
these are separate applications.
And even if you don't think you want a loan, and because it's part of the evaluation process, because if you're not eligible for a loan, you may be eligible for additional FEMA aid.
Okay.
Right. So as I said as well, that's exactly right. For the Small Business Administration, the first step in the process for us is making sure that you've registered with FEMA. Because, again, it's about resources, making sure that whether you're a business, a homeowner, a renter, or a nonprofit, make sure that you register with them. Once you've completed that, you go to the SBA. If you're referred to us by FEMA, a lot of people assume that by doing the FEMA application that they're doing SBA's application. And for us, that's a referral. But you know, the residents, you have to take that next step of completing our application, submitting that online if you're able to at sba.gov/disaster, or visiting us at a disaster recovery center in your area, which you can find at disasterassistance.gov, or you can also call us online at 1-800-659-2955. For businesses, we also have the Business Recovery Center, and that's where they'll assist you in completing your application, the forms you need, as far as what's required as a business, your personal information, and they can take that and answer the questions you have as they're going over it with you. And again, you can find that information at sba.gov/disaster, where you can find a business recovery center and how they can assist you. And I just wanted to point out really quickly that even though our deadline is November 24th, that is for physical property damages. Mm-hmm. We also have the economic injury applications, which has a deadline of June 11th of 2018. So if you're a business, a small business that was impacted in, you know, you're looking for what we call working capital, which is what is it going to take to keep your business doors open. That application deadline is June 11th of 2018.
Would that apply to someone who maybe had to close down for a longer than normal period of time, lost business, got behind on some bills, right, things like that?
So that is exactly really what a working capital loan is. It's, you know, we're not going to try and make you a brand new business, mm-hmm. but we try to get you back to that pre-disaster conditions that you were in. So if you had contracts that were coming up and then the disaster impacted it where you weren't able to meet those obligations, you know, a working capital loan is, that's what it would essentially be. What does it take for us to help you keep your business doors open? Because every business that's within a community, it also helps the community as well. If the community is doing well, then all together, you know, throughout the country, the United States is doing well. So for us, again, the steps in the process, registering with FEMA. Don't just, you know, FEMA may be sending out those determination letters saying you've been referred to the SBA. You know, it's not a bad thing. Go and complete our application. If we're not a good fit for you, we will try to get you back to FEMA for possible additional grant consideration. Mm-hmm. We can't do that if we've never heard from you or if we've never received your application.
I want to get back to that process, too, what happens when somebody is denied the first go-around. But we have a call here from Sally in St. Augustine Beach. Sally, you've got a very specific and particular question. What is it?
Yes, thank you. I wanted to know if someone's home was a boat and was damaged in a storm, would they be eligible to apply, or should they register for help from FEMA?
Now, Sally, is your home a boat, or have you lived on a boat, and have you tried applying?
No, it's not me. It's for someone that I know.
Okay. All right. So how about Sally's question, then?
Absolutely. Someone who his primary residence was a boat, they absolutely should register with FEMA and see if they're eligible for some aid, because many of their fellow Floridians have already done that.
Right.
I think the number I heard for people in this Jacksonville area was about 100 houseboat applications.
Wow.
The numbers are larger in the Miami area and other mm-hmm. parts of Florida, but there have been many applications, and many people have already been helped as far as repairing or getting rental assistance or other kinds of aid.
Well, FEMA representatives, and we'll be here for the next few more minutes here. So, if you got questions or comments, reason to call in 549-2937. If there's an application that you have filed that you're not sure exactly if you've done it the right way or if you've heard back, please give us a call, 549-2937. So, let's go back to the claims that have been processed by FEMA here in Northeast Florida. And people can register, be denied initially, and then let's say they go to the SBA and they fill out those applications. Is there a way that they could be reconsidered after they may have been denied the first go around?
Well, there is an appeal process.
Okay.
But also what we were speaking about was how maybe a loan, SBA decides a loan isn't right for you. And once they decide that, then FEMA can reconsider you. So that would even be before necessarily the appeal process.
Mm, okay.
So you'd want to, if you come to a disaster recovery center or if you get on the phone, you want to, you know, understand that there's the SBA part of it is in there, and then you want to see if you're eligible for additional aid if you're not right for an SBA loan. And then the appeal process, maybe you need to initiate that if you feel it's necessary.
And what are some of the reasons, but very, very quickly and concisely, we've got a couple more calls I want to get to before we finish the segment, but what are some reasons that people might initially, their applications or their registration is denied at first?
Often people, maybe they didn't check the right box or they didn't submit all the information that they needed to. That is a common problem, and that usually can be cleared up pretty quickly.
Okay. Well, we've got a couple more calls I want to get to. Ellen in Melrose. Ellen, how are you?
Hi. I did apply at City Hall with FEMA on the computer, and I was only out of power for 3 days and three 24-hour periods. And the limbs, I have a dozen trees down in my yard blocking one driveway, and I have a whole bunch of limbs down inside and out. But evidently, is it because it didn't hit my house that I didn't qualify?
I can't speak to specifics, but, one thing that FEMA doesn't do, FEMA doesn't, you know, duplicate insurance benefits. And
well, there's no insurance involved.
Okay. Well, the FEMA's basic mission is to make people's homes safe, sanitary, and functional. So
it's tough to get around in my yard.
It's possible that you would, there was some assistance available for debris removal. You could call and see if you're...
you have the number?
The FEMA number is 800-621-3362, 800-621-3362.
And you can also apply for an SBA loan in which...
Do you have that number?
For the SBA?
For the SBA, I don't have access to a computer.
Sure, no problem.
I'm a poor old senior. I'm one of those statistics.
And you know, it's okay if you need help. If you need more information, that's what we're here for. The number is 1-800-659-2955. Mm-hmm. And again, we do have centers open in Jacksonville and St. Augustine, and we will be sure to provide that information.
I don't have anything that would drive me to Jacksonville. When I say pole, I mean pole.
Well, I think the first thing you want to start off with, and I think both of our representatives here would agree, is to give a call. And Ellen, I mm-hmm. hope you get that all sorted out for you, and I appreciate your call.
Thank you so much.
Steve on Jackson. Oh, Steve hung up. Well, Steve, you can call right back if you get it within the next minute or so here. Anyway, so as you can see, there's a lot of confusion, and depending on somebody's individual situation, they may think that they don't qualify or that they were rejected for something that maybe it wasn't a rejection, or maybe they do qualify, they just aren't able to go to the right place.
Right. So I just really wanted to touch on what Gerard was saying a little while ago. And as far as your applications for FEMA or SBA, if you're applying for FEMA, you don't have to wait until you get that determination letter from them. You can go ahead and apply to the SBA if you feel that you need additional assistance. Again, we're resources. So you don't have to wait for that letter to come. You can, as far as appeal process, in each letter that you get, in any government letter, they normally give you the process in the back. I know it's strenuous looking through all those papers and you see denial and you don't want to read that anymore. But, you know, if you keep reading, and I always say read to the very last dot on that paper, whether it's an ink stain or whether it's an actual mark from the printer, read through the very end, because it will tell you what the process is. It will tell you how long it will take, because if you have a determination letter that says you have 30 days to file an appeal, go ahead and file that appeal. Do not just wait for that appeal to come through before you go through the next steps. Appeal, go to SBA. If you were denied for us, you don't agree with that decision, we say our process right there on the back of that letter as well. But still, it may refer you back to the FEMA as well.
Well, I think we could continue this conversation much longer, and we're going to try to make sure that we put all of this information in one webpage document on WJCTnews.org. But thank you very much to FEMA's Gerard Hamnick and SBA's Shanna K. Mallett for being here and taking your questions. We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Join WJCT and Flagler College for a preview and discussion of Secrets of Spanish Florida, a Secrets of the Dead special, Monday, November 27th at 7 p.m. This new documentary tells the story of the first European settlement in the United States and uncovers details that never made it into the textbooks. Go to WJCT.org/events for more information. WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with the 15th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped off at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union branches, Two Men in a Truck, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. We're just a couple days out from Thanksgiving, and the rest of the holiday season will cascade on one another following Turkey Day, as it always does. Staples of the season are, of course, those delicious semi-flightless birds, stuffing, maybe some mashed potatoes, and for the adults, well, of course, a good bottle of wine. But wine is probably good to most indulging adults year-round, and that might explain the success of one St. John's County business, Jean Marin's Gifted Cork. Women's Food Alliance's Lee Court sat down with the wine connoisseur to talk about the secret to her success.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too.
Well, the holidays are here. With us today is Jeannie Marin, the, well, she calls herself the wine geek at the Gifted Cork and Gourmet in St. Augustine. Welcome, Jeannie. I'm delighted that you're here in the midst of the holiday buzz in St. Augustine. Tell us, why wine?
Wine is wonderful. I've been a wine geek my entire life, and I actually was in the furniture business to start with, and when I changed careers, I figured, why not? It was needed in St. Augustine. There was no dry wine shops, and I felt there was a need, so I went for it.
Tell me, what is a dry wine shop? Is it something that's independent That's not connected, that's privately owned?
I am privately owned. When I say dry wine, these are wines that are not sweet.
And, oh, a real dry wine shop.
Right. Okay. I mean, there were plenty of wine shops that had the Florida fruit wines, but nobody in the downtown area had good dry wines. So I felt there was a need, and I did it complemented with gifts in my store.
How long ago? When did you first open?
I opened, it'll be 9 years this February. We are a boutique atmosphere. When you come in, we always greet you warmly and ask if you're looking for anything in particular. We've got about 450 wines from around the world. I've got lots of awesome gifts that are wine and food related. And we always tell people about our daily wine tasting. We do that 363 days a year, and it's based on a theme.
If you're not a wine expert like you are, you're a sommelier, correct?
Correct.
That you look at a bottle and you really don't know what you're buying, so tasting is so important.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, we have a theme, but in the store, we have everything. And my staff is fantastic. Everybody knows all my wines, so we can all help customers make a good selection in their price range.
You mentioned that you have traveled a lot and you enjoy traveling to expand your own knowledge. But recently, I learned that you escort people on international wine tours. Tell me a past one that you did and what may be coming up in the future in 2018.
Well, so far we haven't done international for my groups. I personally have done international.
Oh, you have been gone.
Correct. Okay. But for as far as national, we've been to Napa and Sonoma. We've been to Willamette Valley, Oregon. And this past year, we've done Santa Barbara, California. I believe next year I'll probably do Washington State, or something a little unusual that still...
What is the perfect number for a group to go on one of your tours?
Ideally, I'd like to have about 12 to 14, but we'll go with anything. I've had a group as small as four people, and I would say my average is about 6 to 8 people.
So where do you see yourself? Where's the Gifted Cork going in 2018? What's happening in your space and in your guest experience?
Well, my ultimate goal is to double the size of the store. I have first right of refusal for a new building that's going to be going up across the street from where I am right now. And it'll be 2,000 square feet where I can have not only the wine and gifts, but I can have more seating space, craft beers, possibly a big candy case. I've got a lot of good plans in the works.
I love it. I love the opportunity to sit down and relax and do the tasting, too. So, well, thank you, Jeannie Marin from the Gifted Cork and Gourmet in St. Augustine. I'm a huge Pinot Noir fan, so I'm going to be coming in next week, and just hopefully you'll be tasting some Pinots with my keepsake glass, and I hope you're going to be there.
Absolutely, and I don't have Pinots on the lineup, but I will open one for you, Lee.
Thank you very much. I'll see you around the holidays.
Thank you.
Everybody, when they come to my
And welcome back. It's no secret that Jacksonville is home to some of the latest and most influential medical research in the country, if not the world. And the River City leads the way with its research in no small part to the Mayo Clinic. Dr. Joy Wolfram and Neha Shukla join me now to talk about their latest research into cancer and how they can get more women involved in the field of research and STEM at large. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
So let's start first with the research itself. What exactly do you do in the most layman's terms possible? I know it has a lot to do with these things called nanoparticles and treating cancer, but how would you explain it to somebody who wasn't a medical professional?
Exactly. So I'm a scientist and I run a group that develops these nanoparticles to treat life-threatening diseases such as cancer and tissue injury. And nanoparticles are like tiny little cars that we inject into the blood, and we can fill these cars with medication. And in the blood, they travel to specific locations in the body, such as tumors. And when they're in the tumor, they release the medication. And this means that we get less side effects for the patients, and also we get greater therapeutic efficacy.
And there was a recent research that you were a part of into using a malaria drug, one that's been used for a very long time now, to help make sure those little cars, those little nanoparticles, actually get to where they need to go without being impeded by the body's immune system. How did that come about?
So great question. So one of the main problems we face is that the immune system tries to eat anything foreign we inject into the body. And if this is a nanoparticle that has medication, we don't want that to happen. So we tested a bunch of different drugs, and surprisingly, we found that this anti-malarial compound could actually block the immune system from eating these therapeutic nanoparticles, so we could get more of them into the tumor.
Now, Neha, you work with Dr. Wolfram on some of this research. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience and what you've been able to work on very most recently?
First of all, I would like to acknowledge the Mayo Clinic and Dr. Wolfram for supporting women in science and research. And it has been a wonderful experience working in Mayo Clinic and Dr. Wolfram. And one of my major focus is on working on nanoparticles for cancer therapy.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, obviously, you've just shown us the important work that you're doing, but let's talk a little bit about how you first got into research and the STEM fields. Dr. Wolfram, we'll begin with you. What was it that drew you there? And why do you think there's lack of representation of women in these fields?
So I was always, as a child, very curious about everything around me. And so when I was 7, I asked my parents for a microscope, and I wanted a real microscope. So they had some troubles finding one, but they finally got hold of one through university, and I spent hours looking at everything I could find through this microscope. And then later, when I was 11 years old, my dog had a skin infection, so we took her to the vet. And at the vet, they were doing these skin swabs in bacterial plates. And I thought this was fascinating. So I asked the vet if I could take some of these plates and tools that she was using home. And she said, no, I'm sorry, they belong to her office. And so I was a little bit disappointed. But then when we were walking out of the vet, she came running after me and handed me this bag and said, don't tell anyone. And this bag was, it was full of these bacterial plates. And I went home and built a small incubator and started my own miniature microbiology lab. And one of the first things I did was I would swab our refrigerator, different locations and different shelves. And the result was amazing. I would get different colored bacteria and different shapes and sizes. And I called my family down to my room and said, look how dirty our fridge is.
I'm sure your mother really appreciated that.
Yeah. But it wasn't the fridge that was unusually dirty. It was just science that was unusually cool.
Right.
So since then, I knew I wanted to study biology. So I did a bachelor and master's degree in my home country in Finland in biology. And during that time, some of my friends actually lost their parents to cancer. Oh. So I thought, what if I can combine this intellectual challenge of science with saving lives? And so I decided to do cancer research, and I went to Sweden and Canada and really enjoyed it. But I was also a little bit frustrated because I saw how much money, time and effort had been put into cancer research during the last 50 years. And there was minimal progress, especially in some types of cancer, such as pancreatic cancer. So I wanted to do something completely new in this field. And nanotechnology was an emerging area. So I looked at different places in the world to study this. And the Texas Medical Center here in the United States stood out as a major area of research. So I went there, had some funding from my home country, and ended up doing a PhD at one of the hospitals there.
Neha, why did you get into science as concisely as we can here with the time that we have left? And also, again, what was your experience as a woman going into research in a pretty male-dominated field?
My love for science started as a kid. I've always seen my father working in pharmaceutical companies, and then that's how I started studying about all the drugs and then reading articles and magazines about therapies. So that's how I started. And then I'm a mother of two kids, like both are daughters, and one is 3 years old, other one is 9 years old. And as a mother and as a female, I've always tried to inspire them because we are 50% of nation's workforce. So I've always tried to inspire them to study science and to have a work-life balance. And then being a mother and then being working in the career, you can do all of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I wish we had more time to discuss this, but two very, very intelligent, very smart women doing great research for Jacksonville and Mayo Clinic. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, a live call-in program where you talk about the biggest stories in the state.
This week, a special Black Friday show. As brick-and-mortar stores struggle to survive this holiday season, Florida cities are competing to land the next Amazon headquarters. Plus, a look at the state's budget priorities.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Convinced you've heard it all before? Well, at Indie Endeavor, we challenge that notion. Tune into WJCT's After Hours for the best songs you've never listened to. Tuesdays at 11 p.m.
This Thanksgiving, how likely are you to consume too much and maybe converse too little? It might feel safer to just stare at your phone to avoid a political debate over dinner. But civility and conversation can lead to better relationships, greater creativity, and boost the economy. The latest evidence next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, more on the connections between Russia, Donald Trump, and his campaign. We talk with Luke Harding, author of the new book, Collusion. It's based on the Russian dossier as well on his own reporting. He's a reporter for The Guardian and spent 4 years as their Moscow bureau chief. His book is in part about how the Russians cultivated Trump. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
And finally, this hour, he's a composer and songwriter who is developing a national following, and he lives in Jacksonville. His name, he goes by the name Silva, but with a one instead of an I, and he specializes in electronic dance music. His latest single, Rain, featuring vocalist Alina Renee, is getting a lot of buzz, and he joins us now. Good morning, Alex Silva.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And, you know, to start off, I want to know a little bit more about you. You've got an interesting story. You're not from Florida, and you are in the National Guard, and you actually went down to help with disaster relief in the Keys. What kind of experience have you had being here?
Yeah, so I came down here about 6 or 7 years ago from Massachusetts and joined the National Guard down here as soon as I got down here. Went through school, ROTC, all of that. And yeah, a few months ago, I had my first real big hurricane experience with Hurricane Irma, going down to Miami and then the Keys and doing all that cleanup and you know, patrolling and making sure that there wasn't any criminal activity. So that was two or three weeks where, you know, that's nothing I've ever seen before. So.
And when did you get back to Jacksonville?
I mean, it was about a month and a half ago.
About a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
And so were you in the National Guard or in ROTC and things like that when you were in Massachusetts?
No. So okay. As soon as I graduated high school, I flew down here.
Okay.
I was visiting my brother in Jacksonville. I loved it. So You ended up made the move. Yeah,
you ended up to ended up giving up the snow and like, you know, the Boston Harbor for beaches. And,
right. And try to tell everyone, you know, it's not better anywhere else. You get to shovel snow. So
tell me a little bit about your music career. I mean, is this something that you always had an interest in doing, or was this something that you picked up as a hobby and just kind of fell into it?
It definitely started as a hobby about 10 years ago. You know, I was just messing around making this cheesy techno music and things like that. And I did that for years. And after a while, I got a little bit bored of it. So I started composing more cinematic, epic, orchestral music. And I started doing that for buddies' short films and commercials and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then I got bored of that. So I kind of switched back and integrated it into a more cross between pop and electronic music. And that's where I am now, finally releasing music through my own name.
And is this, would you consider this, I mean, obviously you're in the National Guard, but is this a day job for you? Or is it, I'm in the National Guard, I make music, and I also do something every day? Or what portion of your time, because it seems like it would take up a lot of your time to work in the National Guard and then to also produce this music?
Yeah, so I mean, I do a lot of stuff. I mean, sometimes I'll model too. But, you know, with music, it's not the most consistent thing. So you can't just make music and then bank on that.
Right.
You got to do other things, at least in the beginning, I'm sure. But I do a lot of production work, sometimes for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll get requested to do remixes and things like that, where I can't put my name on it, but I'm still, you know, doing music for work.
So. Now, you know, some electronic music composers, they make the music, they put it online, but they don't necessarily kind of do anything in person. Do you do shows or anything like that? Have you been involved with
that?
Not
yet. Okay. I wanted to have enough original music to call my own before, you know, going around and doing shows. Because I don't know how comfortable I feel being like, you know, like a wedding DJ.
Right.
Or anything like that. So.
Yeah. Well, and you would probably want to be playing your music more
right.
than playing somebody else's. Right.
Exactly.
So tell me a little bit about this music video, though. There was a music video that was produced, I believe it was for Rain, right? Which we just heard at the top of the,
yeah,
of the segment. And it's supposed to showcase Jacksonville and Northeast Florida in particular in a very special way. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we did it. I mean, it took maybe 2 weeks. I thought it would take a day or two, but we were down in St. Augustine, and we, you know, we did scenes at the lighthouse. We did scenes riding around on scooters, you know, down in St. Augustine, mm-hmm. across the bridge, getting drone shots. And the whole thing was a lot of fun. I thought it would just be like strictly business, but I got to act in it. So I wasn't involved in the technical part of it, but I was having a blast. My girlfriend featured in it too. And so we just got to be natural. And yeah, I mean, we jet skied up and down the Intercoastal. I mean, it was a blast. And there were a lot of parts of St. Augustine I've never seen before or done. And I would have never done had I not, you know, been told to do it for this music video. So I had a blast and, you know, we got to see some beautiful places.
Well, you can go online, I assume, by using your stage name, Silva, S1LVA. Mm-hmm. They can find your music, what, on Facebook, SoundCloud?
Yeah, Facebook, SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube. It's on all of it.
All right, so you can look at almost every platform and find his music. He's Alex Silva. Thanks for being on the show. And that's our show for today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show's theme is composed and performed by Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app to listen anytime. Next on 1A, this Thanksgiving, how likely are you to consume too much and maybe converse too little? I'm Ryan Bank, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.